This is a Stand Up New York Labs production, providing you decent podcasts since 2013.
Conversation podcast with funny man Damian Lemon and the voice of your choice, Ali Muhammad.
Yeah, here we are. This is In the Conversation. This is Damian Lemon.
And this is Ali Muhammad, the voice of your choice.
What's going on, man? How are you?
Hey, man, I'm glad to have you back.
Yeah, good to be back.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
How was everything out there with the show and the taping? Y'all wrapped this up the whole season?
We wrapped season 3. We shot good 26 episodes. Damn. 84 episodes in on Comedy Knockout, man. That shit is bananas.
You about to be syndicated.
Hopefully. We working towards that. We'll see what's what.
You got that money.
Hey. Yeah, do the shit for the love.
Now they on you.
You know what I mean? Yeah. It was a good time. We had a good run. We had some new people on there. The names are getting a little bigger.
Mm-hmm.
People are getting a little bit more comfortable with the show. You know what I'm saying? Certain people have come back. And, you know, the rhythm is there. So, felt good.
Did I see Vlad?
Vlad was on there, you know, the young El Capitan was in the building.
Let the people know what's happening.
Yeah, I put it on the gram. Yeah, Vlad came through. Vlad was in the building with the motherfucking the burgundy blazer on. Yeah, VLAD. Shout out to Vlad. So, you know, that was a good one. That was fun. Vlad, Miss Pat, and my man Clayton. No. And Noah Gardner-Schwartz. It was a good episode.
Any other standouts that came on this season?
Some I'm trying to hold off on bigging up, but Natasha Leggero, Moshe Kasher. Natasha Leggero, you might know her. She's a famous comedian, but she's on Dice, the show on Showtime.
No doubt.
She plays Andrew Dice Clay's wife. Moshe Kasher used to co-host a podcast called The Champs with Neil Brennan. You know, they're married. They got a kid on the way. That was our first pregnant guest.
Oh, right.
You know, we out here breaking barriers.
You know what I'm saying? That's
inclusive.
That's about to be a thing.
You know, so that's what's up. It was a good time. It was a good time. My man Brad Williams came through. You know, Brad Williams, he's a comic as well. Dwarf, I guess I should say. I could say it, you know.
Little people?
He's like a little dwarf. I guess I would go with dwarf because I don't know what little people entails.
Really
I don't know if
that
that's
really his designation.
That's what he proclaimed.
Oh, he proclaimed it.
So I'm going by what he told me.
If he said it, then it's all good.
Yeah, shout out to Brad.
No doubt.
And a bunch of other people.
He was a little uncomfortable right there with that.
I went with dwarf because he said that.
Okay, cool.
We were, and initially, we were sensitive to it because, you know what I mean? We didn't know what to, you know, you don't want to make a big issue of it all.
No doubt.
And then first 5 minutes, he went in on the fact that he was a dwarf and his homeboy was carrying him and doing all types of, you know,
dwarf-driven life.
Yeah, stunts.
No doubt.
So it was a good time, though. We had fun. It was, you know. We done for right now. It was a good moment. What's up with you?
Well, that's a good thing, man. I'm out here, man.
Bev in the building last week.
Yeah, we had Bev in the building last week. You know what I'm saying? This week, you know, we got more legendary figures up in the building. You know what I'm saying?
Very iconic.
Very timely. The conversation has grown up.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
We have really come a long way.
Have we?
Yeah, man.
All right. What
we 200?
Something.
How many? A lot of episodes.
Many episodes
in.
Shout out to you if this is your first episode. Go in the archive. There's many for you to listen to.
There are many. And shout out to the people who've been here from episode
Absolutely.
One. Or two or three or four.
Absolutely.
You know. Whenever
Thank
you jumped on board, we appreciate it.
You are appreciated.
You know what I'm saying?
Absolutely.
But I've been chilling. I've been in the lab. But I'm very excited to be here tonight because, you know, we have a friend in the building, but even more than a friend, just, you know, a legendary figure in these times, in, you know, we say fashion and style. It's just in culture, really. You know what I'm saying?
Uh-oh.
In culture, legendary figure in culture, because a lot of things that you may have seen come across, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
A lot of things that stick, mm-hmm. you know what I'm saying, in various eras, you know what I'm saying?
Mm.
Well, she had a big hand in it, you know what I'm saying? And some of those things came right out of her brain and out of her hands and her emotions. So, you know what I'm saying? It's a good thing to have people like that in the conversation. people who create the conversation.
Absolutely. Wouldn't be a conversation without these people.
Nah. So, without further ado, ladies and gentlemen, in the conversation, we have Rachel Johnson.
Round of applause.
Yes. Yes.
Thank you very much. Thank you.
Now, for those who don't know the name, you know what I'm saying? She's done a lot of she's a big time stylist and done a lot of things in style. Tell us a little bit about who you work with and some of the things that you've done. Real brief, because we're going to get to it, but just the top line.
Okay. I have been styling for going on 18 years. I started in the music industry and worked with guys like Puff and Pharrell and Jay-Z and transitioned into specifically working with athletes and helping them fuse fashion into their brands and have been working with them, I guess, for going on 10 years. So I've touched gents like LeBron James and Chris Paul, Chris Bosh, Amari Stoudemire, Cam Newton, Victor Cruz, Colin Kaepernick, and the list.
Wow, no doubt. Now, is it just 10?
With athletes. It's been like 10 years.
Didn't you come in the year of the dress code?
I did. Oh, so that was 2006. So that was
11 years.
That's 11 years. Wow. Yeah.
Yep. Yeah. So that's what I mean. Like, that was a crucial time point in American sports. And consequently, American fashion. You know what I'm saying? Because before that, you had Allen Iverson, and you had the
do-rag era.
The do-rag, but no.
Big there, ass chains.
The five-button suit era, too, as well.
Oh, the Steve Harvey moment.
You know what I'm saying? The Shaqs. Yeah, you know what I'm saying? Yeah. The cats was coming to the game with the long suits and or just in their sweats.
Right, then
they instituted the dress code.
Right. Yes, they did.
And I thought that was the year LeBron was drafted.
No, LeBron was going into his fourth year. Mm-hmm. It was either his third or his fourth year.
Okay,
LeBron been in the game for a while.
Yeah, he has. He's the king of New York too. I hear.
And
I don't know about that.
Apparently, he's the king of New York now too.
We willy nilly with that title.
Okay.
And they actually called him old. In the play calling against the Knicks. And he's old. Like, damn.
How many seasons he's been? About 11? Like, was 13? 13? I mean, that is old in the 15? NBA. Never been hurt.
Yeah, I think it was 2003.
Yeah, that's when 2003. He came so, like, 14, 15.
That's a long time. 14.
Yeah. Yeah, I think this is his 15th sneaker.
Right, yeah. Damn. So yeah. That's it.
So
you came in when they changed the rules to where you had to dress a certain way.
I did.
To come to the game.
I did. It was a turning point for sure in men's fashion, period. Mm-hmm. But men's fashion didn't know it yet.
So how did you come into the play when that happened? Guys, what? Felt like, hey, shit, I need to dress up. I don't have time to shop. How did you come into play?
Actually, LeBron was... Actually, Jalen Rose was my first NBA client. Okay. And I started working with Jay when it was all about jerseys with the matching hats.
Right.
It was all about the Mitchell and Ness jerseys and the throwback jerseys and fitted hats. Mm-hmm. And everybody knew me because I could get my hands on them before everybody else could.
Right. The plug.
So I was definitely the plug.
Wow.
So I started working with Jalen first, and he was the one who introduced me to the entire life, mentality, emotions, schedule of an athlete and their movements. So when I started working with LeBron in 2006, I had great insight into the inner workings of an athlete's daily life.
Right. So you come into the play. It's a dress code. What was your vision when you started working with LeBron? How did you want to see his part of the dress code? Like, how did you want him to play it?
Well, my goal for LeBron was, in my mind, I just knew I wanted him to be on red carpets and have on designer clothing and have on the same luxury brands that any actor or musician who was 5'10 and 165 pounds could wear.
So you jumped over the arena. you skip past just showing up for the game and after the game.
Well, I mean, at that time, all you know, the team that we assembled around LeBron, we had a vision, mm-hmm. and the vision was that he was going to be a global icon and a billionaire. Mm-hmm. So that immediately takes you outside of the arena.
Right.
And you automatically have to think bigger than just what is he wearing to this game.
Right. Wow.
And it was much more about what brands are we going to align him with? What events is he going to go to? Where is he going to be seen? You know, and how can he have a global impact? So with that in mind, all I knew is that from a fashion standpoint, his validity was going to come with the brands that he was able to wear. Right. And at that time, because he's 6'8 and 265 pounds, I'm not just rolling up into Barney's right. pulling all the fly shit. That really entailed me pounding the pavement and going to designers and really begging them at that time to create clothing for him and build clothing for him from scratch. And it was something that was completely unheard of. It was something that designers and design houses could not even imagine. They would look at his measurements on paper and just say, this person can't possibly exist.
Did they say it in like an Italian accent?
They absolutely. This is not fashion.
How do you say?
I don't do this.
Yeah.
Wow.
Nice.
So how did you encourage them, or how did you get them?
Ralph Lauren was the first brand that bought into the concept of mm-hmm. working with LeBron and opened up their entire line mm-hmm. to him. And they allowed me to go in and buy his clothing when the buyers bought their clothing mm-hmm. so that when they were cutting everything to produce it, they would cut specific pieces just for him.
Dope.
And that's the way that started the program that I use for all of my athletes moving forward. But because everything had to be made, we had to start a season ahead like they do right. on the fashion calendar.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So I would go to the shows and see the clothes and pick what I wanted and wait 6 months for things to come in.
Wow.
Mm-hmm.
But that shit worked.
It definitely worked.
That shit worked like a motherfucker. And
it definitely worked.
From that point, everything changed. You know what I'm saying? Everybody showed up different. Everybody, you know, everybody was trying to catch that and be red carpet fresh for the game.
Right.
1,000%. I mean, these are competitive men. They're going to compete with watches, clothes, babes, everything. So
babes. I love that.
Well, wow.
I mean, you know, they compete. So obviously it's like, who has the best stylist?
Right.
Who has the best style? Who's getting featured? Whose clothes are getting talked about? It turned into a competition. And actually at that time, the athletes amongst themselves at least felt like they were being oppressed by the league for being told what to wear
right.
as grown men. They're like, we're grown men, we're millionaires, we know how to be professional, we do what we have to do on the court. How dare you tell us what to wear to work? Mm. But
you took that oppression and turned it into a greater freedom.
If that's what you want to call it. I freed some bad looks from some closets. Well,
I can't speak for the league or nobody or the culture or nobody. I can only speak for myself. So from before that, you got Gators, you know what I'm saying, 6-button suits. I guess Freedman's was doing a lot of work with the players out in Atlanta. and you had Allen Iverson and that style. You know what I'm saying?
Yep.
So if you're the league and you say, hey, you motherfuckers got to dress up. And you like, oh, shit. So if you're Allen Iverson, you like, you want me to put on a 6-button suit? Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? That's mm-hmm. not going to happen.
Mm-mm.
I'm not going to put on a businessman suit. So before there was an option, those were the options that you had. So in creating something with LeBron and shaping a new way of thinking as far as what you can do, that to me, that opened up a whole new world of freedom as far as style and what's possible, what you can do. And they've taken it all the way to an nth degree to this point. But before then, it was one or two things.
It was definitely one or two things. And at that time, the dress code was you had to have on a collared shirt. So be that a polo or a button up, you had to have on a shirt that had a collar.
Oh, wow.
Or you had to have on a blazer. So you were able to wear a sport coat over a t-shirt if you so desired.
Oh, okay.
And you could wear jeans, but you couldn't wear shorts. And at that time, you weren't supposed to wear sneakers, period.
Right. Damn. That's fucking with the money, though, right?
Well, the thing that you can't, that you could wear when you were on team travel was the NBA, like your
official,
NBA warm-ups.
All right.
And the sneakers that you wear to play in. But other than that, yeah, they expected them to come to work like any other man who worked in corporate America.
Mm. Wow. That's oppressive.
So that's what we had to work with. So at first it's like, how can we stay within the dress code and follow what it is that they're saying, but still create this persona and still have my own personality and still personalize this new oppression.
No doubt. So, speaking of new and oppression, this week, GQ put out a cover with Colin Kaepernick.
Right.
You know, who's been, you know, fighting the injustices, you know, protesting the injustices that's been going on in with the police and in the urban communities. And they named him GQ Citizen of the Year. And you put together that look. Right. Which is a big fucking deal.
It's a big look.
Like, it's an iconic situation right now.
We got the fro out on the cover.
You know what I'm saying?
It's very militant.
The internet is going crazy.
They loving it.
You know what I'm saying? They're loving the video came out today with his hair getting pulled back. And you know what I'm saying? He has ascended from just the protester and the ball player. Now he's his goddamn sex symbol, all kind of shit I'm seeing on the internet.
It's a thing.
So
Woke Bay.
Woke,
I've heard they
Woke Bay.
They've called him Jesse Washington. That's a whole new segment. You know what I mean? Of activism. You know what I mean? That's the whole new. You believe in the cause, but you know, they still jacking for you.
So here we go again. You know what I'm saying? We at the cusp of a historic moment.
Right.
And who they call. You know what I'm saying?
To the rescue.
They call the right one. You know what I mean? Let's tell us about, you know, how that came to be, and you know, and we'll talk about the process.
So I've been working with Colin. I call him Cap, so if I refer to him as that, but I like Woke Bay way better. Way better. That's much more accurate. I've been working with Cap since 2013. Maybe it was 2012, but he had been off the grid completely since the whole kneeling controversy has begun.
Right.
So I had not seen or spoken to him since everything popped off.
Right.
Because he stayed really low key, and obviously dressing and looking a certain way was not at the top of his list of priorities.
No doubt.
So not only that, he also, you know, is basically doing no media at all, not speaking, and still hasn't spoken to the media.
Right.
But was approached by every single magazine and media outlet you can possibly imagine, and he turned every one of them down.
I don't think we knew that.
So
continue.
When I heard rumblings of GQ wanting to award him with Citizen of the Year, Colin was on the fence about it. And of course, I'm like, we have to do it. There's no way you're not doing this.
Nigga.
Of course you're doing this. But I kept my mouth shut because I don't know. I have no idea day to day what
right.
Colin is going through right. mentally, physically, spiritually, right. emotionally. This could possibly be the 20th thing that he cared about.
Right.
So I didn't think that it was for me to push this because right. he knows his agenda and where he wants to be and what's right for him. So my goal, A, is to support him in whatever it is that he chooses to do that he's comfortable with.
Mm-hmm.
So I got the call on a Thursday.
The call.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, who? Saturday, or maybe it was that Friday night, Trump called everybody in the NFL who kneeled a son of a bitch.
Oh, wow. So it's before that. Interesting. Like this.
This is the story, guys.
Like the criterion.
This is how it all actually went down.
Listen to this when you look through that GQ.
Exactly.
It's companion piece. Keep going.
Trump said what he said, and the country erupted again.
Right.
And you know, everybody was waiting to see what the players were going to do that Sunday. Were they going to stand? Were they going to kneel? What was going to happen? And the only thing, one of the main things that I thought about is there's no way Colin says no to doing this shoot. There's no way. He has to say yes now.
Right.
Because really the conversation had not died down, but it was really quiet.
Right.
Mm. There wasn't that same emotion and that that desperation wrapped around whether right. or not the players were kneeling or not.
Right, right. So Trump says that it explodes. Now, that's the conversation. Then Sports Illustrated, they do their cover and then didn't put Colin on there.
Well.
Or something like that.
Well, Sports Illustrated and I think Esquire also did a cover on Colin that he didn't participate in.
Right.
And you know, magazines have the right to buy pictures and tell stories. That's right. what they do, right. whether or not the subject chooses to participate.
Right.
So that's how those things happened. Right. But he didn't have anything to do with them. He didn't sanction them. He didn't participate in them.
I don't think Sports Illustrated put him on there.
Oh, they didn't?
Because it was Curry. It was some other. It was a bunch of other players, but it wasn't him. And it was like weird. Like, why? If y'all going to have this conversation, he the main one you need to be talking to.
Right, but he's not talking to anybody.
Right, that's what it was, too. He wasn't, his silence got so loud that this right. was, it set it up for him to
mm-hmm.
step to the mic.
So, if Trump said what he said on the Friday night,
mm-hmm.
the country erupts on Saturday and Sunday.
Mm-hmm.
By Tuesday, I got the call.
Mm-hmm.
This is happening.
Right. Mm. The call.
I got that call. And I knew I was getting yeah. I knew I was
where
getting
was you
that
at when you got that call?
That's a really good question. So I don't remember because I probably blacked out.
No doubt.
Wow.
Because the magnitude of getting that call and being told that Colin wouldn't do it if I weren't present and I weren't part of the entire project.
Mm.
That's dope.
It's just those kinds of things are really overwhelming.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. So I really did black out right, when right. I got that call. But it took us 5 days to put the shoot together.
But not only did he say that.
Okay.
If you wasn't doing it.
Yes.
But there was other stipulations to the style as well.
There were other stipulations.
Talk to us. What were the stipulations?
So the two stipulations were that I style it
mm-hmm.
along with Jim Moore, mm-hmm. the creative director at GQ, who right. I love forever and a day.
Shout out to Jim.
All right.
And he only wanted to wear designers of color.
Oh.
So designers of color or women, female designers.
Right. Mm.
Those were his two main requirements. And since he knew that I was on the team, he knew from a stylistic standpoint, someone who actually understands what he wears and what he's comfortable in, mm-hmm. he knew that I had that. So those were the things that he wanted represented in terms of his styling.
This guy is so progressive. I wouldn't even know what to put me in the fly shit.
Listen.
Look at that. I ain't got no agenda.
So there is no Tom Ford. There is no Saint Laurent. There are none of those go-to brands that GQ usually calls that they have laying around in their desks.
Right.
All of those rules went out the window. And this opens up a whole new moment and movement for them.
Right. You get to go, the green light. What? How you move with it? Are you running? Are you tiptoeing?
I got a question too. Like, what are the, are there parameters on it? Because I see like there's the Muhammad Ali homage. Like, how does that get built creatively? Like, do you take direction from the magazine or do y'all brainstorm together? How's that work out?
It took an entire village to put this project together.
Okay.
And literally we did it in 5 days.
Wow.
Colin agreed to shoot it at the very, literally we shot it on the very last day that we possibly could for it to be able to be edited and go to print on time.
Wow.
So it took all of the masterminds between GQ's camp, Colin's camp, between those two camps to put everything together and create the masterpiece that came from it. But 5 days. So in 5 days, you know that everyone who was involved were people who were at the top of their game and who have in their back pockets the resources to pull something like that together.
Right. So you say this is, you know, when it's the Saint Laurent and the
Yes.
You know what I'm saying? That's already in the movement, already in the credits, already in their handbag and toolkit.
Mm-hmm.
What does that mean for the designers that get this look and that get this credit in a platform like a GQ in an issue that's as historic as this one?
I mean, it's invaluable. It's incredible. It's the beyond my being so proud of Colin and his bravery and his sacrifice, that's the number two thing that I'm most proud of. Because the names that you're going to see in this book are names that would have never gotten into that book. They're designers and clothing and pieces that would have never been in the GQ offices, that the creative directors and the powers that be who decide who's going into that magazine would have never even been exposed to. But now, even if these designers weren't featured or Colin didn't even wear their clothing, the fact that they were in consideration, the fact that their names are now known in those hallways, it was just like, it's historic.
Church.
And so for you know, when I reached out to the designers and we did our outreach, we can't tell them what we're calling for.
Right. You just say y'all ain't got a whole bunch of time.
It's a cover story. Right. It's a cover story, and we're specifically highlighting Black designers or designers of color.
Mm-hmm.
And that's it. And of course, they want to ask a lot of different questions, but there are no answers to be given.
What's that? Black scrutiny is something. Like, now, was there a little bit of pushback? Was it like, come on now, tell me, Rachel, stop playing. Let me know what's really. Or they trust you.
There's no pushback. If you're a menswear designer and GQ wants you to send samples, you send samples.
So you did say it's GQ, though.
Absolutely.
It's a cover for GQ.
GQ, but that's cover.
It. Oh, okay, beautiful.
Oh, yeah. All right. Oh, shit.
I gave them information.
I thought it was no information. Like, listen, just send it to this address. Send me an Excel.
And a double X.
Right, yeah.
And your credit card number, just in case, because I have to send it all back. No, you know.
Oh, true indeed. We'll talk about that too. We'll get into that.
So when they find out what it is, is it when it drops?
So yes.
Damn.
The designers didn't know who was wearing their clothing or what it was for until yesterday.
Damn. That's fire. Who were some of these designers?
So Colin wore War Air Boswell for the cover. But Boz had to create Colin's look for him. He built that from scratch because Colin can wear things off the rack, but for something like this, we wanted to get something made. Mm-hmm. So Boswell absolutely knew who it was for because he needed to know who it was for right. so that he
could make it.
We had 5 days to nail it. So right. I had to buy fabric, send it to him, wow. have him cut it, him send it back from LA.
You had to make the whole shit?
Yeah.
So this ain't just you picked out some clothes.
No, like this things were getting made and like fabric bought in New York, it being cut in LA, it getting back sent back to New York, and us having to fit Colin within 5 days.
Damn.
Good God.
So
a lot of FedEx.
Because of my there was a lot of FedEx and then a lot of prayer because you like please let it show up
right.
on time and please right. let it be there in time right. for this deadline.
Right.
And this is like my career. To me, this is like my career on the line. Like Jim Moore, who is the creative director at GQ, really entrusted me with this project and with this process. Mm-hmm. And I've worked with Jim before on two other covers with LeBron, but wow. there wasn't that level of trust there. A, because Jim was working within the confines of the life that he knows and right, the life right. that he's created.
Right.
But having to bring in these designers that he's never heard of before and that hasn't worked with before, it was really on me. It was really on me.
Let's see what the Blackies can do.
Shut up.
That's just me talking.
But yeah. So, you know, it had to be right. It had to be perfect. It had to be on point for so many different reasons. Mm-hmm. So Boswell, who Colin has on for the cover, knew that it was for him. Mm-hmm. And he also knew that he got the cover. But you never know until you see that cover.
Until you see.
Because, you know, in the magazine world, like we shot two different covers. He could have had on a different designer had they picked another photo. Right. Like, you never know how things are going to change and move around. Right. So it wasn't until it got posted online yesterday morning on GQ.com and mm-hmm. on GQ's Instagram that we knew for sure
right.
what was being worn.
Did anyone call Carl Kanai? Nobody reached out to Carl?
Does Carl Kanai still make clothes?
I mean, I don't know.
I'm saying
Black Designers. I don't know enough.
You went to nostalgia. This wasn't a nostalgia.
I'm just saying.
Shout out to Carl Kanai. Yeah. Shout out to all of them because right. without Carl Kanai, there is no Virgil at Off-White. There is no Jerry at Fear of God. There are none of these guys who are creating right now. If their work, the Carl Kanais and the Echoes and all of those brands that came in before the elevated version of what's out
right now.
So
some of the other designers that actually hit the pages the pictures that came out.
Colin wore Fear of God.
Okay.
Who's made by Jerry Lorenzo. He's out of LA, like one of the leading edge designers in the game, period, right now. Just amongst designers who are having an impact on the culture. He's number one. He is.
I didn't know that.
I know.
Learn something new every day.
You do. He's actually black and considers himself black and calls himself black.
Why wouldn't he?
I mean, you know, he could say that he's mixed with one quarter Indian and three-fourths Italian with a dash of Indian.
Uh-huh, he could do that.
You know, he could line up because the hair, you know.
He got the good hair.
Yeah, I mean, you know, the ponytail. Like, it could have come from somewhere else, but he's like, I'm a black man. Sewing these clothes together and hoping that somebody buys them.
That's what's up.
Look at him.
Look at that.
So the jacket that Colin is wearing that says Kaepernick across the back is one of Jerry's creations by Fear of God.
Nope.
He wore the t-shirt that he's wearing that has all the names of the
fallen ones.
Yes, the people who we've lost to police brutality, police violence, to murder by police is by a designer named Pierre Moss, a guy named Kirby who lives in Brooklyn, who started a brand called Pierre Moss, who shows consistently at New York Fashion Week. His brand is beautifully made, beautifully conceptualized. And he had a version of that t-shirt that he put out a year ago, but he specifically created that t-shirt for our shoot and added more names more to names. It. Because sadly, the list on the t-shirt,
keeps going.
It gets longer and longer and longer.
That shit is fucking ridiculous. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's what the t-shirt says. And even more names.
Even more names.
That's a damn shame. Mm. Yeah.
Even more names. he wore a brand called Musica Ferre, who's out of New York. Who also, it's also run by a Haitian American gentleman.
Sapase.
Hey, lives in Brooklyn. Mm-hmm. Who actually was named on Forbes 30 Under 30 list today.
Oh, okay. Damn. Today.
Today.
Oh, he on fucking fire.
He's on fire.
Him. No, he's going to party.
What? You know he's not answering any text messages, nothing.
Nah.
Cannot find him.
Glove is only in order
It's only pushes. No pull. All push. Hey, did you see me today? Hey, right, what's up with the bag? What's up with the bag?
Yeah. Oh, so Davison Ferre. And he wore a really dope shirling that didn't get featured in the magazine, but it's the shirling that Colin is wearing at the beginning of the video.
Oh, in the video.
By my man Mike B. Shout out Mike Bogard. He's wearing I Bogard. And, you know, like, listen, people called me on the phone, literally, designers called me on the phone crying. Mm. Literally. Mm. Like, thanking me, wanting to take me out. Dope. What do I owe you? What do you? And it's like, you did this.
No doubt. Mm.
This is your work. These are the fruits of your labor. So you owe me nothing. You bask in that.
No doubt.
Whole lot.
But if you want to send me something.
My address.
You know what I mean? I'm just saying.
07631.
You can send the credit card number if you want.
You know what I mean? I enjoy a white wine.
Yeah, man.
Thanksgiving's coming up. I would like to show up with a bottle.
Christmas and such.
You know.
Don't forget about your girl.
Nah, that's dope.
Yeah.
That's big. Well, I want to ask you questions about, you know, obviously this is a huge moment. But this is, I mean, your career has been, it's spanned.
Of a bunch of huge
moments. Yeah, it's a lot of huge moments. You are a Dundada. People know you. People know the fuck with you. I'm curious about these phone calls, the outreach. How vulnerable is the call when somebody reaches out for a stylist? You know, because you kind of got to admit to yourself, look, I ain't really doing it like I thought I was doing it.
How much is your date?
What's the budget? And not even that, but damn, tell me where I went wrong. Help me out. Talk about those conversations, too. I'm curious about that.
You know what? The calls that I get, because my goal, and you can see the impact in my work, is to really just infuse fashion into the lives of athletes to help them boost their marketability. Right. So really, it's about, like, if you have on a black suit, that's cool, but where'd you go in the black suit, and who saw you, and did you get a check from it? Because if you didn't, who cares what you're wearing?
Mm.
So because that's my mentality and the way that I go into things, clients come to me when they're ready to make those kinds of moves. Yeah. They don't call me because they're trying to get the Supreme Louis Vuitton stuff and get me the new Kanye's. Well, they do call me for that, but...
Right. I'm about to say, who do you call for that?
Nah, they do. They're still asking for that Supreme stuff. I'm like, guys, it's sold out. But, people call me when there's a big picture, 360-degree...
audience made.
Yeah.
That, situation.
Yeah, that where they really want to have more of an impact on the culture and want to have an impact on their brands.
Right.
And that does start with wearing the right black suit, but then it expands greatly and has a lot of tentacles that go from there.
So is the right black suit like the tentpole of... the glow up, you know what I mean? Like, you get these big
Gotta
looks.
Have the right black suit.
Gotta have the right black suit.
It has to have just the right amount of sheen.
Uh-huh. Not too much sheen. Not
oily. And you put it on with a white tee and some white Common Projects, and you keep it moving.
Look at that.
Look at that.
That was for y'all.
Keys.
Shit, I need that.
That was for y'all. Figure it out.
I need to figure out what
that is. You got the common projects.
You got those on.
You got those on. You on your way.
It got to have the right sheen,
I don't know nothing about the
sheen. It got to have the right sheen, Ali. And it has to have like a certain amount of stretch to it, too, because it got to fit your thighs a certain way.
Wait. My thighs is real little, man. I don't need
that fitting all on my thighs too much.
Brolicthighs.com. The thing is, you don't want to look like broke Bay. You want to be woke Bay. You don't want to be broke Bay.
Don't be that guy.
Now you don't want to be that guy at all.
Yeah, but what
that suit got to have the right amount of sheen, and no matter how big your thighs are, I need to be able to see a little
sheen,
bit of them.
Talk about
what
the sheen.
Where does the sheen come from? Like, what is that? Like,
how you know your shit ain't got no sheen?
Like, yeah, because,
you know if you have an ashy black suit or not.
I don't know.
You know if your suit is matte and ashy or if it has a little bit of glow to it.
See, when you ain't in that system, all you know is it's black. Who knows? This black is going to be dark. Throw a white shirt on. I don't fucking know what the fuck is sheen supposed to be. Where does the sheen come from? Like, what is the sheen?
Right. The sheen comes from the fabric, and you can test that out by just shining a light on it with your iPhone and taking a picture of it. Is there a little glow? Is there a little sparkle to it? Is there a little light that hits it just the right way?
Damn. I think my suit, Matt.
Look dead in the photo.
My shit just black.
Wake your suit up.
Just go out.
So what's your suit?
Just go away.
His suit look like it's
sleeping.
You know
what I'm saying? My skin be shining. My white shirt is glowed up.
Right.
I think my black just disappeared.
I didn't know.
It's just
black.
It's a void in space.
I can't stand y'all.
You gotta spray your suit down with some oil
put
sheen.
Some oil
Afro
sheen.
You know what I mean? Put some Afro sheen on my suit.
Whatever it takes. Whatever it takes.
What else? What are some other things? I don't want it to be so trite, but what are some tips for people that are trying to get their world together fashion wise? What should just the common man know if he's trying to, trying to be somebody in the world? Somebody with a little bit of aspiration. And
what is this common man thing you
right.
speak of?
I wish you guys could see my face right now.
Like, I don't know this common man.
I know nothing about that.
Okay, let's say this. Okay, let's not.
I don't know that man.
Let's say this cat, he was common on last Thursday, then he got a check last Friday. He don't want to look common no more. He wants to let the world know that I've ascended.
I'm in the space.
Beyond the sheen based black suit, what else should that man pay attention to?
Okay, you should have the aforementioned black suit.
Mm-hmm. No doubt.
You should have either a gray or a navy suit.
Mm.
You should have a pair of dark blue jeans that fit you like second skin. Like that you tight, can wear
like
with
on your ass,
that
like?
You can wear with sneakers or with shoes.
Right,
that's tight. Like
that's
what's the fit? Like is it
how tight? Is it, how we going? Legging tight?
Not legging tight.
Okay.
But all of you gents should have a pair of jeans in your closet that has some stretch to it.
Okay.
Like if your jeans don't have any stretch,
my jeans ain't got no stretch.
I know they don't,
don't,
and that's why I'm touching them right now.
Oh,
I'm doing the stretch test. He got some stretch on his. You told the
wrong John G.
Don't be stretching on these motherfuckers. Yeah, nah, shit.
But go ahead. So a little stretch on your jean.
A little stretch on your jean is good, and don't be afraid to go down a size. Just try it.
What happens when you go down a size?
Sometimes when you go down a size, you turn into woke bae.
Ooh.
And you'd be really surprised. I mean, that's what I tease my clients when they first start working with me, because I'm like, yo, unless they're married, the kind of woman that you're going to attract after you start working to me is going to be very different. So you should prepare yourself.
Uh-oh, talk to us.
Now, okay.
Let's hear about it.
Because there's a new kind of girl, there's a new kind of woman that's going to be in your life that's going to gravitate towards you once that black suit has the right sheen and those jeans have a little bit of stretch to them.
Mm.
And that's just me as a girl knowing what I've seen.
But you do a good job. What I've noticed throughout your career, you do a good job in making a man be like a woman's man. You know what I'm saying? Not like a thought, but like a woman's man. And you do a good job at that, but where you have a good sensibility of taking a dude and keeping him manly, but making him attractive to, you know what I'm saying, that particular woman that you're talking about.
Yeah, that's always the goal for me. I definitely dress my men so that when women see them, they're drooling and like, damn, I want to take him home.
Right.
That's not, always
not making them look like a little, you know what I'm saying, like more girly. Like some people go too far and it's where it's almost feminine. But you keep it real, you know what I'm saying, like a man's man, but you know, the nigga got his glow up on.
Yeah, I have to, because I would never want to be with a man who looked feminine in any way or looked like he was wearing something that belongs to me.
Mm.
Like, girls are supposed to borrow your hoodie, not, you're not supposed to borrow their blouses.
Right. Or their purse.
No.
Yeah. Mm.
So that's definitely something that's really important to me. And I like for the clothes to melt into my clients. Like, I like that their ensembles look more like second skin, so that it gives their personalities and their faces and their charm and their charisma an opportunity to shine. So the first thing isn't necessarily what you see is the clothes, but you see the man first. So that's like really important to me.
No doubt.
And that's definitely reflected in you. You see that in the way that Colin is dressed.
Right.
Throughout that cover, it's really, it's about the body, it's about embracing the muscles, it's about, you know, showing off all of that work that he does, and just about the simplicity of being a man.
Word. Now, we've covered all the fly shit. You know what I'm saying? We've done all the high level upness. That's what they call it on this show.
The upness.
Celebrate your upness. We was real up.
We all about the ascension.
We was real up right here. We was in this conversation was real up. And that's good. Because, you know, our people, they like the upness. But we want to take them back a little bit. You know what I'm saying? Where did you connect with fashion? Where did you feel like this was something that you wanted to do?
Well, I knew that I wanted to do this when I found out I could get paid to do it.
Mm.
When I found out that styling and creating images was an actual career path, I knew that this was the direction that I wanted to go in.
But you had style prior to that. At that, so
listen. Let's
before you knew you could turn a profit off of your style, how did you discover the fact that you had style? You know what I mean? Like, how did you... Certain people, when they got style, it's second nature. It's like innate. You know what I mean? Can look at it and figure it out. Other people, that shit look like a puzzle. So when did you discover, wow, this is a gift that I have? How did it come to you? And then you found out you could turn a profit.
Junior high school, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
Early.
Very early.
Yeah, I mean, you know, it was how I was raised. My mom is really creative and exposed me early to fashion and art and fabrics and texture. She made a lot of my clothes when I was little, so it was something that I grew up with and something that was definitely just infused into my life.
Mm-hmm.
So once I had the ability to once I was able to have the resources to get clothes and be able to experiment with them and try and fail and try and succeed, that's basically how it all developed.
Now, and so you had this idea of what you can do for making stuff and being creative. I know you from FAMU.
Mm-hmm.
And at FAMU, y'all used to have a booth on the set selling clothes. You know what I'm saying? That was different than what everybody was wearing. But when y'all started doing it, it changed how the campus looked, actually. So the shit that y'all was selling was the shit that people started wearing. And it was like, it changed the whole look. You know what I'm saying? Like, this was what, the 90s? And something like that.
Yeah.
And then y'all was out there. Y'all had the vintage. You know what I'm saying? That vintage was new to niggas. like me. I ain't no shit. I mean, you
old clothes.
Yeah, old clothes and shit. Like that was
expensive.
That was some shit you was supposed to be wearing. That's right. Some shit that you look at, dress up with Halloween, right. Shit like that. But y'all made it so that that shit turned into an everyday item that people wore to fucking class.
Mm-hmm.
And it changed the whole look of the campus at that time, which was very amazing to me. You know what I'm saying? So, I mean, from that perspective, you went from junior high, just, you know, your mother introducing you, you making stuff. But, like, at that era, what were you thinking and what was going on in your mind at that point as far as style and fashion?
Right. So, at FAMU, Ali and I went to Florida A&M University in Tallahassee, Florida, together.
The Rattlers.
Go Rattlers. And I'm a city girl. And to have to be confined to a place like Tallahassee, Florida, that literally is another planet to me, was stifling creatively, or could have been stifling creatively.
Mm-hmm.
So I made it a game. I turned it into a game. And my goal, maybe like Russell Westbrook, was to wear the most outlandish shit I possibly could. Mm-hmm. Like, I had short hair, it was blonde, it was red, it was pink. That was
before Eve and all them motherfuckers now.
It was before all of that.
All that shit.
And
that shit was foreign, it was alien.
But yeah, it was. But that was how I had fun, and that was my release. My release was like going to vintage stores or going to thrift stores and finding dresses and cutting them really short and then taking that fabric and tying it around my head, and because that was what I could afford to buy at the time.
Mm-hmm.
And so I ended up with such an excess of clothing because of all of the pieces that I had amassed and recreated along with two of my girlfriends. And so many girls came up to me and would ask me where I got my things, ask me like why I had the nerve to wear it or how I had the nerve to wear it. And, you know, I could tell that they wanted to be a part of what turned into this movement.
Right.
Mm.
So yeah, we figured out that we could turn a profit on it. And there was a market that students could pay $10 for to set up and sell whatever it is that they wanted to sell. And my two girlfriends and I would go to Florida State on Wednesdays and FAMU on Fridays, and we would set up our clothes. And when I tell you that girls would be standing there waiting for us to come, mm-hmm. like waiting for us to pull the stuff out,
mm-hmm.
and put it on the rack. And as soon as we put it on the rack, the girls are snatching stuff. Like it turned into something that I never would have imagined.
Yeah, it was a movement. It was something totally different, because you talking about the girls, but I even seen guys walking around campus in leisure suits and shit. I'm like, what the fuck is going on? Like, y'all turned the whole shit into something totally different. Because you know how I'm going to give you the look for the dudes. You know how Luchini video was?
Camp Low?
Yeah, this was
before that shit now.
Right.
That's how dudes was walking around campus looking right. like Camp Low and shit, shopping with them.
Yeah.
Where'd you get the vision from? And where were you getting the clothes? Was it like, were you thrifting?
It was all thrift stores.
Yeah.
It was all thrift stores.
But it was all very organic. I mean, that was very organic. And like my styling career and like all of these things that have happened were all very organic. And I know that some people are, you know, goal oriented and they're task oriented and they write everything down and they're like, in 5 years I'm going to do this and then I'm going to have, but the things that have come to me that I've been able to do, it's nothing that I ever even imagined,
right.
or anything that I could ever write down.
Mm-hmm.
It's really just me going with my gut and just continuing to express myself genuinely.
But from knowing you from then to now, it's just all who you were. You came with that. You came here with that shit. You know what I'm saying? It wasn't like you built it. You like, oh, this is something that's the wave and I'm going to jump on it. This is what you was already doing, and it just fit all the way through because that's what you was gifted with. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? And I guess before, you know, before we get out, the last thing we want to talk about the Jersey shit, the Jersey era, because that was the real glow up.
I got a question too on a whole nother.
Go ahead, do that before.
Well, this is a little bit more. Is hypebeast a culture now? Because the term hypebeast has been kind of more so like a, I don't want to say like a slur, but it's an adjective.
It's used to describe. It's just like being called a hipster,
right? And which most people don't really embrace the hipster title. They be like, you know, I ain't no hipster, but they be a hipster, right? But I'm starting to watch people like really embrace the hypebeast shit because, you know, the hypebeast thing is all over the place. So you get caught up in it. I was watching this one YouTube video, and this one cat was like, you know, I live the hype. I'm a hype life. You know what I mean? I live, you know, I'm a hype beast life. Like, he was proud.
He owned it.
Like, it was hip-hop. Well. And I wasn't mad because with that, you have to be very resourceful, very, you know, you gotta, it's a lot of pursuit to that. Like, it's, to be a hype beast that is thriving, there's some work you gotta put in. And it kind of reminded me of, like, when you were in hip-hop, and say, for instance, you were a DJ or a producer, like you had to go to record conventions to go get these obscure records, so you had the breaks before everybody else and things of that nature. And I'm noticing it, like, it's really like, it's deeper than just having on some Supreme. It's like, oh, I know these guys. You see things like Complex Con, where it's like, you know, there's a culture developing. So I'm curious what you think about it. Actually, I saw you at Complex Con last year. Mm-hmm. What do you think about it? And how you feel about it?
I love all of these movements.
Right.
Because people sometimes want to express themselves a certain way, but they don't know how to.
Right.
And so if attaching yourself to a certain movement that you feel with that you identify with is the way that you're able to do that and express yourself to mm-hmm. the world and like get that out and get that off.
Right.
I'm all for it. Like, do that. If you want to be on the Nike app pressing refresh, refresh, refresh because you're trying to get those
Off-White.
Yeah, the Off-White Jordan ones.
Right, right.
Do that. Or you go into all the sneaker swapping conventions. I love it. I think that it is, it's part of what's going to continue to push the culture forward. Right. And I'm mm-hmm. all for it because that's going to morph into the next thing. And then that's going to morph right. into the next thing. And then you see all of the opportunity. There's in that world also, there's so much opportunity for entrepreneurship
right.
mm-hmm. because there's so many different ways that you can start your own business off of this hypebeast culture. Mm-hmm.
Flipping.
So, you know, I think that our world is going in that direction anyway, mm-hmm. and we're continuing to figure out ways that we can rely on ourselves to make money.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
You guys know. I mean, that's the life that we live.
21st century hustle, baby.
Exactly.
I have one other follow-up question to that. How you've been in the game for a long time, now, making relationships with certain store owners and certain people behind these brands, are there any tips to that to make sure that you kind of get outside of being a big personality? If you're just a regular person that's trying to be plugged in, mm-hmm. are there any tips to nurture these relationships?
Sure.
Outside of just buying their shit.
Right. Well, buying is the number one way that you're going to build a relationship.
Right, right. The money talks.
Spin that coin.
Right.
Be clear. That's the way that you build the relationship first. But then the second way is to make sure that you are connected with the same people every time you're spending that money.
Right.
So if you're going into a store or you're dedicated to a brand and it's one that you really love, you make sure that you're on their mailing list. You make sure that you find out what events that they're doing. You make sure that you show up to those events, and you make sure that, you know, when you're spending your money, you're spending it with consistently with the same salesperson, right. or you've made friends with the manager, so that people know your face, and they call you when before it comes out or before it hits the floor, and they put it to the side for you because they already have your credit card information, so they already swiped that thing, you know. So
they know it's good.
Yeah, right. They know it's good. Right. They know it's gonna work. We back to the credit card number again.
Hey, it's all about the credit card, baby.
Ooh, this is a nervous moment.
Let it be good. Yeah, you be gotta, good with it, cause. But again, like,
you got to believe in somebody to just let them have your credit card information.
Nah, but that's when you're in the game, though.
I guess so.
When you're in the, it's the game, baby. You can't. You know, you leaving your credit card with the places where you want to spend your money.
You leaving your credit card places.
I ain't in the game.
Okay. I just want to be sure. I was just saying. Okay. Okay, yeah.
Motherfuckers got my credit card number is very rudimentary.
It's like the water company.
Right.
Electric.
You know what I'm saying?
Spectrum.
Adobe. You know what I'm saying?
Right. Adobe.
Very video oriented shit for my business. Other than that, you know, hey, listen. That's I ain't there. But I do want to touch on, before we get out of here, I do want to touch on that movement, because just like this cap thing is historical, just like the NBA thing, the sports thing that you did as far as the dress code and all that shit, that was historical. But in hip-hop, you know what I'm saying, where it all began, where it all started, you know what I'm saying, that Jersey moment. That was your moment. Mm-hmm. That was when you took, yes, when you went from little baby Ray to all the way Ray.
Jerseys. Who knew? Jerseys.
You know what I'm saying? So tell me how that moment actually popped off. Because everybody know the goddamn throwback jersey era. The Fab era, the J. Hey, y'all know that shit. It was a moment in Black history.
It really was.
You know what I'm saying? And you were right there at the wave.
Mm-hmm. So, whoever thinks that they have the claim to fame to starting the whole Jersey wave, it really was Fab and Clue that started the whole Jersey situation.
No doubt.
So, my partner at the time, Crystal Streets, was dating Clue.
CAU.
And so, Clue put us on to Fab because Fab was his artist. And that Y'all Can't Deny It video, which was Fab's first video, was when he had on all of the jerseys, the throwback jerseys with the fitted hats. And that's all he wore, and that's all he wanted to wear. So, you know, between his plugs and our plugs, that was the movement. And for some reason, it caught on. And everybody wanted to wear jerseys. That's how I started working with Jay, because he wanted jerseys. That's how I started with Jay-Z. That's how I started with Jay Lynn. That's how I started with a lot of guys who just knew that we could get jerseys.
The plug.
And so we got hired based on that.
And so that was it. You was young. Tell us about where you were at during that time. Like,
I was young and I was popping. Ooh, I was living. I'm living now, but it's different. Because I'm like grown.
You were excited.
I was excited. I was so excited to work. Like, my whole entire life was work. And I didn't sleep. I didn't eat. And I didn't care. I was just so happy to be able to get paid to do something that I really love, that I totally would have done for no money at all. I didn't even think that anything like that was possible. It really sounds like it's something that could possibly be cliche, but it absolutely isn't. And, you know, I traveled. Work was my social life because, you know, when you work in those environments, it's really like all about socializing. And so, yeah, like at that time, we were heavily doing videos like the Y'all Can't Deny It video, the Jay-Z Girls, Girls, Girls video.
But that was 9/11.
That was 9/11. That's another that story is crazy too.
You know what I'm saying?
Tell the people.
So my girl Crystal and I were on the American flight before the one that crashed into the towers. We went to LA the night before. We were on the last flight going to LA on American, the 10 p.m. flight. The next flight that left to go to LA crashed into those towers.
Damn. Good Lord have mercy.
We went to LA to do the Jay-Z Girls, Girls, Girls video. woke up at like 5 a.m. to our phones ringing like crazy. It was 5 a.m. L.A. time. Woke up to our phones ringing like crazy because people wanted to know where we were because the first plane hit the tower. So we turned on the TV. We were watching everything that unfolded. We saw the second plane hit. We saw the towers fall. And then we went to work. Because you don't understand the gravity of what happened. You don't understand the impact of what just happened. So we went to work and started shooting the video. And we didn't start shooting the video. I would say we were on set for about an hour before everything really just started to materialize and people understood the gravity of what was happening and they sent everybody home.
Oh, so y'all didn't shoot that day?
We did not shoot that day. We did not shoot on 9/11, but we did shoot on 9/12 because these video commissioners paid for
crews, clothes.
Flew everybody out there.
Jerseys out there and shit.
And all the girls were there. So we ended up shooting that video. But if you could imagine having to get back home and us having to get on a plane and fly back home.
Crazy.
That was so crazy. Yeah, and you remember the airports were closed and everything was grounded. Crazy. So, you know, we had to stay there. Yeah, everything was different after that.
No doubt. But, you know what I'm saying, before we get out of here and shit, that right there, okay, you got the jersey moment, you was a plug, you put those, Fab did his thing, Jay did his thing, and the world was wearing jerseys and shit, right? And then you got a little hustler out of Cleveland that's selling the jerseys, you know what I'm saying, running to LeBron, because LeBron want the jerseys that he got. Little Rich Paul hooked with LeBron.
Richie.
And the rest is kind of like history. Like, you know, Rich came into the scene. LeBron blew up. It was a whole moment based off of jerseys right there that y'all put in the plate and you were able to be on that same team later on to take it to the next level in history, which is a crazy-ass connection to me. You know what I'm saying? I don't know if nobody else see it, but that's a crazy-ass fucking connection that all of that came together. You right here, you still in the middle of it, you still making history, and shit, I salute you.
Wow. How about that? Thank salute. You. Question for you real quick before, I mean, I know that was the one guy. I'm gonna question after the toast. I'm curious, as some, you know, as this fashion elite, who do you see as today's fashion icons? And then who are some of the people that are kind of following in your footsteps, or not maybe in your footsteps, but the young stylists in the game that you kind of, you see coming or have made their name that you want to kind of shout out, if at all? Because fuck it, if you don't want to, you don't got to. We can cut all this shit out. Go ahead.
Fashion icons, yeah. Huh?
Who are some of yours, and then who are like the current contemporary? Who's moving it? Who's pushing it forward, in your opinion?
Well, designer wise, it's definitely Dow and Max at Public School.
Word.
Definitely, again, Jerry Lorenzo from Fear of God.
Mm-hmm.
Definitely Virgil Abloh from Off-White. Chris Stamped. Ronnie Feig is like. Mm-hmm. Just weekly continues to blow my mind with the moves that he's making in fashion, but then like connectedly also in real estate. I see you, Ronnie. Yeah. I see you.
The Google game is up right now. Yeah. I'm on my Google.
Those are some of the guys who, from a designer standpoint, who I think are having a real impact. And then, as far as stylists are concerned, definitely Jason Rembert. I see you, Jason.
Oh, I see you, Jason.
He's a stylist who I have watched work this system to the nth degree. Mm-hmm. Like, if there's a textbook way to work the system and thrive within it, Jason is someone who is doing it and doing it really, really well. And I admire him greatly. And then the girls who came up under me, Khalila Webb Williams, or Khalila Williams Webb, girl, get rid of one of those names, please. Callie-Anne Barnett, who works with D-Wade, Keisha McCloud, who works with Serena and Iguodala, Courtney Mays, who works with Chris Paul, does a beautiful job on him. Like, there are a lot of the stylists who are making an impact in the world of athletes and fashion and, mm-hmm. and continuing to push everything forward. Most of them I've worked with at one point in time or another. And although they probably hated me when they worked for me, they have to love me now because I know that they took my fierce regimen with them and were able to apply it and do it successfully.
And that's what it's all about, you know, man? That's what it's all about. You came, you do your thing, you know what I'm saying? And the people who work with you, they learn and they grow and they go.
Yep. Yes, they do.
There you go.
So that's the other blessing. I mean, that's what it's all about, being able to pass it on, because somebody definitely passed these opportunities to me. Shout out to Ali.
Even though he's getting a shout out.
Shout out to Ali, who got me my first styling job ever with Sybil Penix and Louis Johnson. Shout out to Louis Johnson and Sybil.
Mama Sib.
Yep. We did a Boys to Men album cover shoot. It was 2 days long. I still have never seen that many clothes assembled in one place. Mm. But Ali hooked me up with that job. That was my first styling job.
But let me tell you the story of that right
Look
there.
At that.
Let me tell you the story of that. I didn't know we was going to go to that. But I was starting, it was a newsletter at the time. It turned out to be my magazine, 21st Century Hustle. And the first interview that I did was with Sybil, because I met her with Carla. And Sybil, after the interview, was like, you know, I need a new assistant. I got this job. I need a new assistant. Do you know anybody? And the only person I knew in fashion in my whole world was you. And I didn't even know what fucking styling was. I didn't know none of that shit until this interview. But when she was talking, it was all that shit that I seen you do at FAMU. And I seen it, you didn't just do it for yourself. You did it for the whole culture of FAMU. So when she said that, you was the only person came to mind. And you were at a job. What was that? An architectural firm or some shit.
Shout out to HOK.
You know what I'm saying? And I was like, you know what? You need to do this shit, man. Fuck that. fuck that job. Not knowing your financial, you know what I'm saying, situation. But fuck that job. You need to do this shit. Because... I don't know. She right with Puff and them. Mm-hmm. And you took that shit to a whole nother place. That shit was, you know what I'm saying? I was just the messenger. I ain't do shit. You took that shit to a whole nother place and went where you was supposed to be because that's who you were. And that's what the gifts that God gave you. And because of that, you fit, you rent, you ran, and you turned the whole shit out.
Amen to that.
Church.
Praise him.
Where you gonna be, D?
I'm gonna be in these streets. I'm about to be in I'm in New York. I'm doing The Stand. I'm there quite a bit this week. Stand up New York a little bit. I'm just in the world. Check out my Twitter. I'm about to revamp this this website. Get some dates on there, but that's it. I'm local now.
No doubt.
Yeah.
Rach, where you gonna be?
I'm headed to Vegas this week for the Latin Grammys.
Oh, word. Okay. You at the Vegas? LA no
more? The Latin Grammys. I get checks in all cultures.
No doubt.
I accept all kinds of coin.
No doubt.
pesos, euros,
Bitcoin,
yen.
Holla at your girl. Shit.
Yeah, I'm doing that. I'll be in Atlanta next week for Thanksgiving with my mama.
No doubt. All right. Who is fashionable than the motherfucker right now?
Yeah, she really
started
is.
The whole motherfucking kimono fucking situation right now.
Exactly.
But okay, we're going to continue.
And then I'm going to Norway the week after that to go and see the Northern Lights.
No doubt. Fly. Oh, shit.
Yeah.
So where can they find you?
You guys can find me at www.thomasfaison.com. And you can find me at Loving Rachel on Instagram.
No doubt. And I'm going to be in Brooklyn and shit. Y'all can find me at the Instagram, Mr. Muhammad. At the Snapchat, at Thorough TV. And shit. Till next time, tell a friend to tell a friend.
And even an enemy.
To get in the conversation.
Oh, you know what? I'm going to be at the Pit tonight. If you're listening to the podcast today, I'll be at the Pit tonight, 8 p.m. So check that out.
Right on.
Yeah. And we out.
Main thing of it all is to be in the conversation.